This is not going to be a pleasant experience. You're going to see and hear things that are not going to be very nice.
Experts divide serial killing into two general types, organized and disorganized. An organized killer brings everything he needs to complete the murder. A disorganized killer improvises.
Begin. Listener discretion is advised.
In the world of true crime, we often talk about the various types of professionals who've truly seen it all. Doctors who've treated every kind of injury, detectives who've solved the most twisted cases, and even lawyers who managed to come up with the most ridiculous defenses for their clients. But in the glittering chaos of Las Vegas, Nevada, where every spin of the roulette wheel tells a different story, there's another group of professionals who've seen everything Vegas has to offer, or at least, the aftermath. And I'm talking about housekeepers. Just imagine some of the stories they must have. On any given day, housekeepers find the most absurd remnants left behind from the previous night's escapades. Drugs, money, weapons, and more often than you'd think, dead bodies. But this isn't even the weird stuff. Online forums are full of house cleaners telling the wildest stories that would rival scenes from the movie The Hangover, from the shocking to the hilarious, to the downright disturbing. And the craziness isn't confined to the hotels and casinos. On March 4th, 2019, a Las Vegas house cleaner was called out to a two-story suburban home located a few miles off the strip. A nice area, relatively new, and from the outside, it looked like a perfectly quiet family home. But once the housekeeper went inside, the cleaner knew immediately there'd been some sort of house party. The woman who called the cleaner was 29-year-old Kelsey Turner, a blonde bikini and lingerie model. She lived at the home with her 4-year-old son, her boyfriend, and two other roommates. Almost apologetically, she told the cleaner there'd been a party the night before and said the guys had gotten out of hand. Surveying the damage, Kelsey showed the cleaner an upstairs bedroom door that had been ripped off its hinges and completely broken in half, and she asked him if he'd be able to replace it if she bought a new one. The cleaner wasn't sure. There was significant damage to the frame as well. According to Kelsey, her son had accidentally locked himself inside the room, and seeing no other options, Kelsey and the rest of the crew decided to break the door down. The cleaner suspected she wasn't being entirely truthful, to say the least. To him, it looked like there'd been a massive fight. Inside the same room, he saw one of the roommates furiously scrubbing at a red mark on the carpet using pet stain remover, but it wasn't getting the job done. Although the whole scenario seemed on the suspicious side, Kelsey assured the cleaner that the red stains were actually wine, definitely not from blood. One roommate offered the cleaner an extra $20 if he could take care of the stains for her, which he did. By Las Vegas standards, the party cleanup at the suburban home wasn't anything spectacular. It certainly wasn't the craziest thing the cleaner had ever seen, and it might not have been the worst he'd seen that day. Even still, in the back of his mind, the cleaner knew that something had happened inside that home. Something Kelsey Turner didn't want him or anyone else to know about. That very same day, about 400 miles away in Salinas, California, 59-year-old Judy Earp drove herself out to the Monterey Regional Airport to pick up her longtime partner of 17 years, renowned child psychiatrist Thomas Burchard. The 71-year-old doctor was scheduled to return that afternoon from a short trip he'd taken to Vegas. Judy watched as the plane landed and watched as passengers, one by one, began disembarking the plane. But there was no sign of Thomas. By that point, Judy had already been worried that something might be wrong with Thomas. He hadn't been answering his phone for the past 24 hours, and the few text messages she had received from him lately seemed rather odd. They just didn't sound like him. She would later describe these messages as having been written by an uneducated vocabulary. After not seeing Thomas get off the plane, Judy spoke with the airline personnel, who confirmed Thomas had never checked in for his flight that day. For Judy, this was the final straw, and she decided to call Las Vegas police and officially reported him as a missing person. Judy told them Thomas had been showing early signs of dementia or possibly Alzheimer's. He'd gotten lost in familiar places, forgot familiar faces, and even recently, forgotten the names of his own two pet dogs. Judy then provided police with the address of the home Thomas was staying at while in Vegas. It was the home of former Playboy model Kelsey Turner. Police went to the location to perform a welfare check, and a man named John Logan Kennison answered the door. But when officers inquired about Thomas, John told them that neither he nor his roommates had ever heard of the man. The following day on March 5th, Las Vegas police officers again went to Kelsey's house to look for Thomas. They knocked on the door, but this time, no one answered. Finding the door unlocked, they went inside, where it soon became obvious no one was home. In fact, the sheer amount of cleaning supplies scattered around the place made it seem as if the occupants were in the process of moving out entirely. Without finding neither hide nor hair of Thomas Burchard, police were eager to speak with Kelsey as well, but she also was nowhere to be found. At this point, police didn't know what to think. Had Thomas become confused and gotten lost somewhere, or had something sinister happened to the elderly man? And considering Kelsey seemed to be missing as well, it was possible the wealthy doctor had simply run away with a beautiful blonde model. A woman young enough to be his granddaughter. Initially, all three possibilities seemed plausible, but police wouldn't have to wait long before finding their answer. When people think about Vegas, casinos, hotels, and neon lights are usually the first to come to mind. But there's also a lesser-known side of the City of Sin, one that's a complete polar opposite. Surrounding the city is an incredible desert landscape, and this vast expanse of natural wonders is a veritable outdoor paradise for adventure enthusiasts. To the city's west lies Red Rock Canyon, offering world-class hiking, biking, and stunning views. To the east lies Lake Mead, the largest reservoir in the United States, created by the construction of the Hoover Dam. On the morning of Tuesday, March 7th, a man decided to go exploring in the desert near Lake Mead. He'd just purchased a pickup truck and wanted to take it off-roading to test it out. Not long after pulling off the highway and hitting the desert trails, the man noticed something strange in the distance, a blue Mercedes-Benz, abandoned in the middle of nowhere, about 2 miles off the main road. Around 11 o'clock, the driver reported the abandoned vehicle to Las Vegas police. When officers arrived on the scene, they had no idea how long the car had been sitting there. Sitting on the passenger seat were several pairs of blue latex gloves, the kind a surgeon might wear. They also noticed bloodstains on the driver's side headrest, as well as blood in the back seat. Strangely, there was also a spot on the passenger seat where someone had clearly attempted to light a fire. Why a person would do this is anyone's guess. Had someone tried to set fire to the entire car but failed miserably? If so, what were they trying to hide? Officers would soon discover the gruesome answer. As soon as they popped the car's trunk, they were greeted by the overwhelming and unmistakable smell of death. The entire trunk was filled to the brim with clothing, sheets, and towels. Buried beneath them all was the partially clothed body of an elderly man, Thomas Burchard. From his wounds, it was obvious Thomas had been the victim of extreme violence. According to the coroner, he had defensive wounds on his arms and hands, as well as apparent bleeding around the brain. One ear was completely removed, and parts of his face and mouth were caved in. The official cause of death was listed as blunt force trauma to the head. When police ran the vehicle's license plate, they were in for a bit of a surprise, because it turned out the car was registered to a man currently living in China. This was a new wrinkle. Just what on earth had the 71-year-old doctor gotten himself involved in? And where was Kelsey Turner? Police would have to take a closer look at the life of Thomas Burchard in order to untangle the bizarre mystery that ultimately led to his demise. Born in Boston in 1948, Thomas was practically destined to become an educated professional. His father, Charles Henry, was an architecture professor at Harvard University, setting the stage for Thomas's educational and professional journey. After graduating college with a Bachelor's of Science, Thomas began studying medicine at the University of Virginia, where he fell in love with the field of psychiatry. In 1975, Thomas began a residency in Los Angeles, practicing adult psychiatry, but soon found his true calling as a child psychiatrist at UCLA. In 1977, Thomas moved to Monterey Bay, just south of San Francisco, where he began an extraordinary career at the Community Hospital of the Monterey Peninsula. It was a position he'd hold for the next 40 years. Over the following four decades, Thomas built an impeccable reputation within his field and local community. Renowned for his exceptional generosity and a ready laugh, he was often affectionately described as jolly by those who knew him. As Thomas got a bit older and his hair and beard turned white, people couldn't help but compare the jolly man to the real-life Santa Claus. He even had a little magic up his sleeves. One thing any former patient of his would tell you is that Thomas loved magic and routinely performed tricks for the children at the hospital. But magic was something Thomas also took fairly seriously, even becoming a proud member of an exclusive Los Angeles magicians club known as the Magic Castle. Practically every single day of his career, Thomas wore the exact same outfit: khaki pants, a white button-down shirt, and a bow tie. He was quirky, he was jolly, and he was one of the most well-respected child psychiatrists in California. According to his girlfriend Judy, Dr. Burchard believed most of his psychiatric patients either suffered from chemical imbalances that could be treated with medicine or from stressful circumstances in their environments, most commonly caused by financial problems. She said Thomas believed he could solve anyone's problems with his pen, either by writing a prescription or a check. And it was the latter that caused him a bit of grief back in 2001. Previously, Thomas had been married to a woman named Jerry, and statements from her divorce filings are certainly enough to raise some eyebrows. Jerry alleged she'd discovered Thomas had been sending thousands upon thousands of dollars to women he'd met online. Thomas claimed the money was just going to help these women pay some bills, like rent or food. But Jerry claims these women often had suggestive screen names and believed his relationships with them were very inappropriate. Not long after his divorce, Thomas met Judy, the love of his life, who he eventually settled down with in a small farm near Monterey Bay. Thomas's career as a doctor had made him a fairly wealthy man, but it was rare for anyone to see him spending money on himself. Instead, he was often seen spending money on others, loading up shopping carts full of groceries and essentials for patients, as well as other members in his community he knew could use some extra help. Some media reports have claimed that Thomas's financial generosity was disproportionately given to young, attractive single mothers in financial straits, insinuating that he had a type as well as a hero complex to rescue damaged women. But this characterization is something Judy strongly refutes. On her personal YouTube channel, Judy states, "That's absolutely not true. He helped everybody. Man, woman, child, senior citizen, it didn't matter." Still, Thomas's reputation for going above and beyond to help those in need, especially financially, was well known. And Judy believes this reputation is what ultimately led to Thomas receiving a particular email at the end of 2017. The email was from Kelsey Turner, who at that time was a 24-year-old mother with two young children. It's not believed Thomas had previously known Kelsey before this, but Judy believes one of Kelsey's friends might have been a former patient of Thomas. In the email, Kelsey introduced herself as a victim of domestic abuse. She said she was in the process of leaving her second husband for being violent with her. But because her husband was in the military and they lived together in military housing, Kelsey said she was facing the prospect of not having a place to live. Even though Kelsey claimed to be a successful model, she said she didn't have any credit history, which was making it rather impossible to qualify for a loan or lease. For Thomas, the message from Kelsey ticked all the sympathy boxes for him. A struggling young mom and two young children who'd either have no place to live or be forced to return to a home where domestic violence was the norm. So Thomas made the decision to help Kelsey. But what he went on to do for went above and beyond, even for him. Born in 1993, Kelsey Turner was raised in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and according to friends, she always dreamed one day of being famous. Kelsey aspired to walk in her mother's footsteps as a model and attended beauty pageants. As she got older, she also began developing an Instagram following with the handle ArkansSassy1993. Most of her glamour photos at that time showed Kelsey posing in sundresses, cowboy hats, boots, and acoustic guitars. But once Kelsey turned 18 and moved to California, her appearance and modeling trajectory underwent a bit of a transformation. Adopting the moniker Bad Barbie, her posted photos took on a noticeably more daring and provocative style. Over the next 7 years, Kelsey would get married and divorce twice and have two children. But as a model living in LA, Kelsey was finding enough success to get by and even seemed to be going places. Around 2017, her career began gaining more traction, with her Instagram followers now reaching over 100,000. She even landed the cover photo for several men's magazines. Posing in bikinis and lingerie, Kelsey even modeled for Playboy Italia and Maxim magazine. But according to Kelsey's email to Thomas, she desperately needed to get away from LA and her abusive relationship. After receiving the email from Kelsey, Thomas offered her more than just a little financial assistance and got her completely set up at a nice rental home in Salinas, putting his name on the lease and paying the $3,200 in rent each month. Despite the move taking her 300 miles away from her modeling career in LA, Kelsey happily moved into her new home, along with her children, as well as her mother, Samantha. But the generosity didn't stop there. Thomas took out a loan for a BMW convertible and gave it to Kelsey, while he continued making all the payments. And soon, he was practically financing Kelsey's entire lifestyle to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And here's when things get a little bit murky. The exact nature of the relationship between Kelsey and Thomas is not known, but many, including law enforcement, believe their relationship was both intimate and transactional. In short, they believe this was a sugar daddy situation. And reportedly, certain text messages between the two strongly suggest their relationship had been sexual in nature. But this is something Judy adamantly denies. Even Kelsey herself denied their relationship ever becoming intimate. But if that wasn't the case, what could possibly explain Thomas's lavish spending on her? In an interview with Elle magazine, Judy claimed Kelsey was extorting money from Thomas by threatening to ruin his professional reputation if he didn't continue giving her money. Now, we're not going to repeat the unfounded allegations Kelsey was threatening to make against Thomas, but we do know that law enforcement would later examine these claims and definitively prove them to be entirely false. Despite Kelsey's threats of blackmail, Judy encouraged Thomas to cut her off completely. She was ruining him financially and bringing unnecessary stress into his life. Toward the end of 2018, Thomas finally agreed with Judy and stopped paying Kelsey's rent. 3 months later, she was evicted. In order to put some distance between himself and Kelsey, Thomas paid for her to relocate to Las Vegas, a place with lots of opportunities for Kelsey's modeling career. He helped her get a lease on a nice 4-bedroom suburban home, with the understanding that Kelsey would live there alone with her 4-year-old son, who had custody of her other child and older daughter isn't clear. Moving Kelsey to Vegas was supposed to mark the end of their relationship, but it wasn't. Because not long after moving, Kelsey began asking Thomas for even more help, telling him she was struggling, that she was sick, couldn't find work, and couldn't afford childcare. Whatever she needed to say to regain his sympathy. And it appears that Kelsey's sympathetic stories had their intended effect. Because after supposedly cutting her off financially, Thomas forked over another $300,000. But Judy contends not all of the money had been freely given to her by Thomas. Instead, Judy alleges that most of the money had been outright stolen from his accounts. According to her, Kelsey had been printing fake checks using her home computer with his bank account number. When exactly Thomas and Judy discovered Kelsey's financial fraud remains unclear, but it's safe to say, by the beginning of March 2019, Thomas realized something was very wrong. And if he didn't suspect outright theft, he at least began doubting the veracity of Kelsey's sob stories. He wondered if Kelsey had truly fallen on desperate times again, or was it all just a lie to fleece more money out of him? Deep down, he probably knew the answer. On March 1st, Thomas chose to take a spontaneous trip to Las Vegas without telling Judy. She only found out about the trip when he called her after landing. It was the last time she'd ever speak to him. During the call, Thomas told Judy Kelsey was such a pervasive liar, he just wanted to check things out for himself. Although Judy attempted to talk him out of it, Thomas was determined. The next day on March 2nd, Judy received an encouraging text message from Thomas that read, "All is well here, and I look forward to coming home. I think I've effectively resolved the things that needed to be resolved." He also added he was looking forward to flying home on Monday. But the next day, things had gotten weird. Thomas wasn't answering calls from Judy, and the text messages she received from him were terse, strange, and certainly didn't sound like the man she'd known for 17 years. Later that day, Thomas's cell phone was turned off completely, never to be turned back on again. Nobody knew what had happened to Thomas until his body turned up days later in the trunk of a blue Mercedes, abandoned in the middle of the Nevada desert. Police were initially surprised to learn that the blue Mercedes was owned by a man currently living in China. Obviously, he couldn't be the suspect, but once they dug a little deeper, everything started to make sense. It turned out that the listed owner of the vehicle had placed an advertisement on Craigslist back in November, looking for someone to take over his car payments, and the person who answered the ad was Kelsey Turner. Even so, it seemed unlikely that a 5'4", 125-pound woman would be able to lift a 6-foot-tall, 250-pound man into the trunk of a car all by herself. Not only that, based on where the car was discovered, miles and miles away from civilization, police doubted she'd simply abandoned the vehicle and walked all the way home in the middle of the night. To them, it was obvious. Whoever had murdered Thomas had not acted alone. The very next day after the car's discovery, police secured a search warrant for Kelsey's home. Inside, police discovered used blue latex gloves, the very same kind found in the Mercedes passenger seat. They also found several distinct blue and white striped bath towels in a pile of laundry, the exact same style of towels they discovered in the trunk of the car. Upon entering the garage, the potent smell of ammonia filled the air. They also noticed a number of cleaning supplies and blood stains that appeared someone had attempted to clean up. Next, police obtained a search warrant to search Kelsey's phone records. Location data showed that Kelsey hadn't left the city between March 1st and March 5th, but in the early morning hours of March 6th, Kelsey hopped on the freeway and turned east on Lake Mead Boulevard toward the exact location the Mercedes had been discovered. As for where Kelsey was right now, detectives had no idea, because on March 7th, Kelsey had shut off her cell phone completely. Detectives believed that Kelsey turned off her phone as soon as local TV stations began reporting a body being discovered in the desert. While searching Kelsey's house, detectives also discovered the same thing Thomas would have discovered when he first arrived at Kelsey's home on March 1st, that she had roommates. And this would have been quite the surprise for him. After all, he'd been under the impression that only Kelsey and her son had been living there. Instead, all 4 bedrooms in the house were occupied. Her 2 roommates were 30-year-old Diana Pena and another man named Jeremy, whose girlfriend Chelsea would often stay over as well. But there was also another man staying at the house, Kelsey's new boyfriend, a former gang member named John Kinnison. The man who told police he'd never heard of Thomas Burchard during their first welfare check. When Thomas came to visit, Kelsey was determined to keep her new relationship with John a complete secret. And it's reasonable to assume that, for whatever reason, Kelsey believed this new relationship would be a major deal breaker between her and the man who'd been financing her lifestyle for nearly 2 years. She even went as far as to instruct her roommates to tell Thomas that John was just her tattoo artist. From the start, police had been fairly confident that Kelsey had not acted alone. And when they processed fingerprints taken from the blue Mercedes out in the desert, they were able to identify prints from both John Kinnison and Diana Pena, both of whom had also gone conspicuously missing, along with Kelsey, after Thomas's body was discovered. Police now had 3 major suspects. On March 21st, Kelsey was arrested by a fugitive task force in Stockton, California. But when detectives went to interview her, she immediately asked for a lawyer and refused to speak. Over the following weeks, police would arrest both Diana and John in connection with the murder as well. And while John appeared unwilling to cooperate, Diana decided to come clean and tell detectives everything she knew about the night of the murder. According to the roommates, Diana and Jeremy, this is what happened to Thomas Burchard after arriving at Kelsey's house. For starters, the roommates were all aware who Thomas was before he'd arrived. They knew he'd been throwing money at Kelsey left and right, and that Kelsey referred to the doctor as her whale, a common term in the world of gambling and con men, referring to a mark with extremely deep pockets. Kelsey's number one concern during the visit was making sure Thomas never discovered John Kinnison was her new boyfriend. and the roommates all agreed to play their part in the deception. After all, Thomas's money was paying the rent. Thomas's first night in town was apparently quite uneventful, and is probably the reason for the encouraging text messages he sent Judy the following day, March 2nd. But not long after that, the wheels started coming off when Jeremy's girlfriend Chelsea showed up to the house quite drunk and focused her attention toward Thomas. At some point, Thomas and Chelsea decided to drive to the store together, and once they left, Kelsey exploded with rage. She began fighting with Jeremy, accusing Chelsea of trying to steal Thomas away from her. She feared Chelsea would tell Thomas about her relationship with John, and everything would be ruined. The fight escalated to the point where John punched Jeremy in the face, and as soon as Chelsea and Thomas returned to the house, Chelsea and Jeremy left in a taxi to get away as quickly as possible. At some point, Kelsey's son was sent away to spend the night with a friend. Clearly, the situation at home was no place for a child. At about 2 a.m. on the morning of March 3rd, Kelsey and Thomas drove to Caesar's Palace to pick up Diana from work. On the way home, Thomas took a wrong turn, and Kelsey used his phone to get directions back. But while Kelsey had his phone, she decided to use the opportunity to look through Thomas's messages, which is when she discovered a text message chain between Thomas and her own mother. Apparently, they'd been secretly discussing the possibility of having Kelsey's son removed from her custody. It was at that moment Kelsey flew into a rage and started hitting Thomas, who was driving. After arriving home, Kelsey continued looking through Thomas's phone and discovered a trove of pornographic photos, which she then used to level threats and accusations against him. According to a Stockton newspaper, The Californian, Diana stated that some of these photos included images of Kelsey's mother, Samantha. Thomas attempted to remove himself from the tense situation by locking himself in Kelsey's son's bedroom. But soon, John kicked the door open and charged in, wielding a baseball bat, and started swinging. Thomas sustained several head injuries and begged Diana and Kelsey to take him to the hospital. As he got into the back seat of Kelsey's Mercedes, he vowed to not disclose the true nature of the incident to hospital staff. Diana claimed she was in shock about what she was witnessing, while Kelsey ordered her to clean up the mess in the bedroom. As she did, she overheard Kelsey berating John, telling him to knock Thomas out cold and insulting his manhood for not being able to do it. And apparently, the insults had their intended effect, because John then walked toward the garage with a handgun, where Thomas was still sitting in the car. Moments later, John emerged from the garage covered in blood. It's believed the fatal blunt force wounds to Thomas's head were made with the pistol. For the next several days, Diana, Kelsey, and John went into hiding, staying at various hotels. Exactly who drove the car out to the desert on March 6th remains a bit of a mystery. But cell phone records show Kelsey's phone traveling toward Lake Mead on the night the car was abandoned. About 2 hours later, Diana's phone showed her traveling toward the same area. The most likely explanation is that John and Kelsey drove the car into the desert and then walked back to the highway where Diana picked them up. Many of the unknown details about this case were expected to come out at trial. Who had driven the car? What really was the true nature of Thomas and Kelsey's relationship? And, most importantly, why would Kelsey decide to murder the man who'd been her own personal piggy bank for years? But the jury would never get to hear the answers to any of these questions. Diana Pena accepted a plea deal in return for her full cooperation and pleaded guilty to accessory to murder, and was given an incredible sweetheart deal. She was only sentenced to 3 years probation. John ultimately pled guilty to second-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. He was given a sentence of 18 to 45 years behind bars. John also expressed his adamant refusal to testify against Kelsey in court. Perhaps because of this lack of cooperation, prosecutors allowed Kelsey to enter an Helfrich plea, a way of pleading guilty to second-degree murder while officially maintaining a claim of innocence. And because of this plea, Kelsey never addressed the true motivation behind Thomas's barbaric murder. During Kelsey's sentencing, prosecutors summarized the case against her.
So she is someone who benefited greatly from the financial assistance of the victim. The other thing I would just point out to the court is that she is not a bystander in the murder. She is the one who initially set off the beating by alleging that there were highly inappropriate images on the victim's phones. And this was actually a claim that she had made in the past. As in the past, we had a look at this phone and that claim turned out not to be true. And she's the one that directed others to clean up the mess of the murder. And of course, most notably, she is the one that directed Mr. Kennison to knock out the victim in this case and subject him to an incredibly long and painful beating. You know, for her part, she was content to leave someone that she knew for a number of years, who supported her and her child financially for a number of years, to rot in the back of a car in the desert that he paid for.
Despite the fact that Kelsey wasn't the one to deliver the fatal blow, there's a metaphor that Judy frequently uses to describe Kelsey's culpability. John Kennison may have been the gun, she says, but Kelsey Turner pulled the trigger. In the end, Judy believes Kelsey had swindled Thomas for at least $700,000 over the span of just 2 years. Ultimately, Kelsey was given a sentence of 25 years in prison, with the possibility of parole after serving only 10. The possibility of Kelsey getting out on parole is something that terrifies Judy Earp, and she addressed this concern before the court during Kelsey's sentencing.
Prior to Tom's murder, Kelsey Turner had threatened violence and even threatened to kill me if I caused her to be evicted. Considering the fact that she was that angry over an eviction, she will be much more angry after having been incarcerated. Obviously, this threat is to be taken very seriously, given the very reason we are here today. I do not want to have to spend the rest of my life constantly worrying and always looking over my shoulder if or when she is granted parole.
Judy also made sure to remind the court that she and Thomas weren't the only victims of this tragic murder. Because of who Thomas was, his murder would have devastating ripple effects throughout his community in Monterey Bay.
I also want to mention many other victims of this crime, the silent ones, his patients, who are some of the most vulnerable people, and most were children. I can't begin to tell you in the past how many people had come up to us and said, "Dr. Burchard, you probably don't remember me, but 20 years ago you saved my life when I had tried to commit suicide." It grieves me to think how many lives have not been saved due to his murder. I also had many parents of his current patients tell me they were devastated and didn't know how they were going to tell their children. His murder left a huge gaping hole in the whole community of Monterey. Every time I hear of a suicide in the area, I wonder if it was one of Tom's patients, and is this another victim of Tom's murder?
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you. This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.